Hi Harold.
Hi Mark.
How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We are probably the biggest proponents of Rhino in the country.
Really?
Love Rhino records. I have been a Rhino fan. In fact, I was looking in my closet and I have tons and tons of Rhino records.
Great.
You remember what records were around?
Well, I still have mine.
Yeah, I miss records actually.
I always tell people, you know, whatever they ask, you know, never get rid of your records.
I think so. I've kept them all. I don't know what they're worth anymore, but...
I don't look at it that way. I look at it as, you know, if you enjoy it, and sometimes, you know, there's a different sound, there's a different sound benefit, there's also the packaging. And, you know, I don't really think they've actually appreciated that much at the moment. I'm surprised, actually, but, you know, maybe another 10 or 20 years from now, I mean, you know, you see what things go for.
Well, CDs maybe not be around then either. You might have MP3 type things, little tiny little... You know,
I think my thing is I think people just have chips in their teeth and then they can, you know, whatever they want, they can think of it and they can hear it. But we're doing a few DVD audio titles, which won't be out till next year, early next year. And that'll be interesting to see if that becomes a factor. But one of the ones we're doing is the new Fireside Theater record, and the CD's coming out the end of October, but the DVD is going to be in surround sound, so I'm, you know, really looking forward to that.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I think one of the great things about Rhino, and earlier when it was when it first started, the box sets and the fact that you guys take stuff that hadn't really been heard for a while and bring it back. And I want to know a little bit about how you started this. I know that you and Richard Fu started this about 21 years ago. What was it that spurred you on to starting the company, and how did you go about doing it?
Well, the interesting thing about Rhino was we didn't really start out to say, okay, we want to do this business, and here's our plan, and this is what it's going to be, and we're going to make a lot of money. Basically, we were just guys who liked records. We were record fans. And the label started as an outgrowth of the store. Originally, it started in the back room, and then when we felt a little bit more emboldened, we broke away. But the three types of our orientation back then was pretty similar to what it is now. But we liked rock and roll, new rock and roll acts, and we were very supportive of the LA scene. Unfortunately, that's been very frustrating for us because it's too difficult to compete against the majors, so we don't do very much in the way of new artists anymore. Richard and I grew up with Novelty Records, Purple People Eater, Alan Sherman, The Witch Doctor, and in the early days of Rhino, we were focused on doing that in part because we could record really cheaply. But ultimately what has happened is radios really tightened up, and those types of records are not played with any regularity, so there really aren't novelty records anymore, which is, I think, unfortunate for the, you know, younger generation who grows up and doesn't really, you know, is unable to experience that. Although that side of us, you know, is still prevalent in our humor, like the Fireside Theater and doing new albums with them, and the Stan Freberg box that we just put out are on a different level. The Simpsons, we have a new Simpsons record coming out in November called Go Simpsonic with the Simpsons. So but one of the things we always knew we wanted to do was to reissue a lot of the great music that we grew up with, because at that point, when we first started, a lot of it wasn't available. Like, you couldn't buy a Best of the Turtles or a Best of the Spencer Davis Group. And sometimes when it was available, it was really schlocked out there. The labels at the time, it was more along the lines of, let's see if we can squeeze some extra dollars out of these old hits, rather than for us taking the position of, this is really important to us, and it should come out sounding great and looking great and having informative liner notes. But we couldn't do that originally at Rhino because we didn't really have the money to pay the record labels for the advances. So it took about 2 or 3 years of, you know, making some money before we could actually start doing that.
I remember when you released, there was a Turtles picture disc. It was in a shape.
Yeah. Well, we did a couple of things. One is we did a Turtles picture disc, which had unreleased material on it, and that, of course, had a, back in the days when there was a craze of putting pictures on actual vinyl records. And then the gimmick a couple years after that was doing shaped discs on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And we did do a green turtle-shaped vinyl disc. It was an EP of four songs that actually somebody could put on their turntable and play the record, and it would, you know, this turtle would be going around the turntable.
I bought that.
Oh, good.
Still have it. Never unwrapped it, actually.
Well, I think that that's appreciated, although I'm not quite sure how much.
Well, actually. I don't know either, but a lot of the stuff you bought, you know, I remember the Turtles were on White Whale Records, and then you bought their whole catalog eventually and really re-released it, right?
Well, what we do is, we, you know, most of what we put out is older and before Rhino started, so obviously it belongs to somebody else. And not everything we want to do can we do, and sometimes some things we do take years. But most of the time, if we license, we have to pay the label or whoever owns it in advance against royalties from sales on the record.
Mm-hmm.
So in most cases, it's a record company that owns it. Sometimes it's a producer, and then sometimes it's an artist. Like the Turtles actually own their own masters, and the reason why they own them is because they had sued White Whale Records in the early 70s. For unpaid royalties, and ultimately White Whale couldn't pay them, so as part of the settlement, they got the rights back to their own master. So occasionally that happens with artists, but with the Turtles, they were from Westchester, the Westchester, which is a suburb of Los Angeles, which is the community where the L.A. International Airport is based, and
mm-hmm.
that's where they were from, and that's where I was from. So while I was a little bit younger than them, I knew some of their brothers. So that's kind of where I had the original contact and appreciation of them. And they just made so many really great records, and it was glad that we were able to actually, and initially we put out the best of, and then we put out some of their other records.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I mentioned, I do mostly interviews with acts from the 60s and 70s and 80s, and some new stuff, but relatively most of it's old. And I'm always telling people that, in my opinion, that from the mid-60s to the early 70s was the best years of music. And it seems to be reflected in the fact that a lot of the stuff you're releasing was from those years, and it still sells and still does great.
Well, I agree with you, and part of that is not necessarily trying to put myself into a position of saying, okay, well, that was, you know, you're always more impacted when you're younger and more impressionable. But if you look at the music and why I think great music is timeless, is there were certain qualities that were inherent in music from the mid-60s to the early 70s, whether it was, there was a real adventurousness about it and a real sort of spirit of rock and roll. I think a lot of music the last 15 years, 20 years, has become much more calculated. In the 70s, rock and roll became big business, so therefore it became more of a serious thing for people to participate in, so it became more serious, and there was less fun, less abandon. I mean, if you listen to Little Richard, and a Little Richard record that doesn't compare to anything today, or you listen to a lot of the pop records like the Turtles we talked about, or the Monkees, and the songwriting and the craftsmanship, I don't know, that's kind of about the best way I could describe it.
Yeah. You guys have gone so far in all different directions, though. You mentioned the Monkees, that was one, of course, a big one. But you've gone into video, you've gone into the Kids Rhino, and you yourself actually got the your company into books and films. Now, when you folks were purchased by, was it Warner?
Well, we're part of the Warner Music Group. It's a complicated arrangement, but originally in 1992 we created a joint venture with Atlantic Records. And why we did that was because it gave us access to the great wealth of catalog that they had. So we would put out, say, we put out a Otis Redding box set.
Rita Franklin, everybody's on there, yeah.
A box set, and then we restructured the deal a year ago so that we have now access to Elektra and Warner artists. So we just put out, for instance, a Doobie Brothers box. We put out an Alice Cooper box earlier in the year, which is
incredible, by the way. We interviewed some folks from the group on that. What a great box set that is.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's my favorite box, but then we just put out a Stan Freberg box, so I have to say those are my two favorites.
And that is also excellent. We checked that out. In fact, the Doobie one just came, and that's a great one as well.
I see that one. You got yours before me. I haven't gotten one.
Well,
So that's, it's just really, for us, the music is important, and whether it relates to the Warner labels, or whether it relates to, just others in general, we just feel that this is our mission, to put this out and to make it sound great and to look great, and, much more than that, the money that we might make, because we don't make money on everything, or the label that we've created, it's getting it out there for people like ourselves to enjoy.
Did hooking up with Warner give you some more capital that you could do things like the book thing and the Rhino films?
No, but where that came about is, even though we were putting out basically records or CDs and cassettes, we never looked upon ourselves as being only a record label. Richard and myself looked upon ourselves as kind of having these broad pop cultural interests. So the way the video label started actually is an interesting story. A friend of Richard's made a video movie with Andy Kaufman and wrestler Fred Blassie called My Breakfast with Blassie.
I remember that.
And it was kind of like a lowbrow send-up of My
Dinner with Andre. Yeah.
And he couldn't get it released. So he came to Richard and said, look, you've been thinking about starting a video label. Why don't you let this one be the first one? So we did that, and interestingly enough, the last... where we did a premiere of that at a theater in Los Angeles. It was the last public performance of Andy Kaufman.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be re-releasing that video in the next few months, because there's the Jim Carrey movie where he plays Andy Kaufman, Man on the Moon.
It's going to be Andy Kaufman mania coming again.
Yeah, so anyway, we hope that this will get out there and seen. But so we did that, then there's the book label, and we had three films out last year. Why Do Fools Fall in Love, the story of Frankie Lyman, and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, the Hunter S. Thompson book.
Yeah.
And we're working on a couple things, that are going to be coming up soon as well.
And the other thing that I thought was a really big turning point in Rhino's setup was also the partnership you did with Turner Entertainment in terms of releasing some of the greats, Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz and all these different things, that a huge catalog of great musicals that have gone just to the old record bins.
That's right, and Turner was very prescient in that when they bought the certain rights, I should say, to the MGM catalog, and then we made a deal with them in order to reissue that. And again, we basically put the Rhino philosophy to the MGM soundtracks, which is to really expand the experience. So on Wizard of Oz, we found out that a lot of the music that was in the film had never been out on a soundtrack before, so we obviously included that and included some outtakes, including a vocal outtake of a musical number, and so that became a double album. But we did 2001 Space Odyssey. When we looked into that, we found out that the music from the film was not on the soundtrack album that was originally released. Basically, they had to rush release the soundtrack album, and they just used library music, like the Blue Danube theme, for instance. So when we put out the soundtrack a couple of years ago, it was the first time that the music in the film was actually on the soundtrack album.
Huh. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing that this stuff didn't happen until more recently. I had Buddy Epson on the show a while back, and we talked about his experience as the Tin Woodsman in The Wizard of Oz, and some of the stuff that's now being rediscovered of some of his work as well.
Right.
It's amazing to me. Turner put out a video tape of, I guess it was the 50th anniversary edition of The Wizard of Oz, which actually had outtakes of Buddy singing as well.
Right, well, I saw that. It was... he had a problem with the makeup. He was allergic to the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he couldn't. And there was also, I can't remember, but wasn't there a Ray Bolger a musical sequence that I think was deleted from the
film. Right, yeah. There was one that was deleted that they actually restored in that film.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of, that's what I think is great when you can do that kind of stuff. Go back into the archives and do that. And Rhino's been doing that in musically for a long, long time. Personally, you mentioned before that some of those box sets were your favorites. Do you have a favorite or something that you guys rescued from the heap that people hadn't discovered for a while?
You know, there's so many different albums that are, you know, favorites that mean so much to us. One thing that we put out was The Ruddles. And The Ruddles was the TV show that was sort of a send-up of this documentary that had been done in England on the Beatles, and it starred Eric Idle. And yeah, I'm a big Beatles fan, and I always loved that show. And Warner Brothers Records originally put out the album. And a few years ago, when we looked into reissuing it, I made it a point of trying to get certain songs that were part of the TV show, but that were not on the original Warner's final album, and we were able to do that. So, you know, that was very gratifying to be able to, not only for myself, but to give other people who were fans these songs that they couldn't get. There's just, so many different things. I would put this in the same category, but the Firesign Theater, I was a big fan of theirs in the early 70s when they made their four classic records for Columbia Records. And even the early days of Rhino in the early 80s, we actually released a few of their other albums at that point. But when they came to me a couple years ago and said, you know, the four of us are back and we want to record, you know, I was interested, but the album that they put out last year, Give Me Immortality or Give Me Death, and the new one that we have coming out the end of October, Boom Dot Bust, they're great records. It's I mean, a lot of times an artist, when they've been around 10 or 20 years, their craft, their art isn't quite up to the level that originally was. Well, with Firesign, it is. So I feel that I'm, you know, giving them a chance to make these really great records because they deserve to.
Yeah, I agree with you on that completely. It's interesting. The Firesign Theater, we had one of the members on, and we talked to them about the new stuff that they had in the last one that you released, and it was great stuff. And again, we also had on Carl Reiner to talk about the Reiner and Brooks CD, which was also incredible. And it's bringing back to a whole new generation all this stuff that you and I grew up with, but these kids had no idea it existed.
Well, in the earlier days of Rhino, when we were doing this, we were thinking that most of the people probably were like us. They originally had the vinyl albums, they wanted to replace them on CD. But as much as, you know, that's totally fine with me, I mean, I think it's important to expose this great music to new people. Because, I mean, great music would have an effect, you know, not just for the people who heard it, but for other generations, like Mozart. Mozart is great, or Beethoven. Well, it's not just people who existed during that time. I mean, it's great music. It can be appreciated now and will ever be appreciated. So probably a good example would be something like the La Bamba movie in 1987 about the life of Ritchie Valens. Well, that was a hit movie. Prior to that, probably not that many people knew who Ritchie Valens was.
Mm-hmm.
But because the movie got out there and millions of people saw it, then all of a sudden a lot more people, you know, became acquainted with Ritchie and his music, to the point where he's now on the ballot to be possibly voted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Hmm. It's amazing. I'm looking at your catalog, and this is an incredible catalog. Now, if folks listening or are listening on the internet right now and want to get a copy of the catalog, is there a phone number they can call to get one?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. There's a Rhino website. You mentioned the internet, and
mm-hmm.
It's rhino.com. And some of these albums that we've been referring to, if people want more information or they want to see the track listings or see what's coming out, that's probably the best source because it's all right there.
Right, we're actually going to put a link to that site on our site so that everybody can be referred right to it, because, of course, people are listening to pmpnetwork.com on the internet right now. And I want to thank you so much, Harold, for coming on the show. And if there's anything else that we didn't cover, please talk about it. We got about a minute left.
Well, the other thing coming up in November, we have The Simpsons, Ghosts and Sonic with The Simpsons. Our other album did really well, and we think that that's going to do really well as well. We have Kid Rhino, our kids label. We have our new Blues Clues album coming out. We have the new Star Wars movie. We have a storybook on that. So we're doing lots of things here.
Kid Rhino had that Teletubbies. The album came out that I know my daughter bought. And of course, The Simpsons Songs in the Key of Springfield was a really big hit.
Right, that's why we're doing another one.
Yeah, well, if you sell a lot of them, you might as well do another one. But there's been some great ones. The doo-wop box set was incredible. The Otis Redding greatest hits CD.
So we're doing with PBS 50 Years of Doo-Wop special, which is going to be airing in December. It's going to be their big fundraiser.
And the other one, Beg, Scream, and Shout. Great box set.
Thank you.
One of the things that differentiates Rhino from all the rest of these people are some of these really interesting concepts, like that Beg, Scream, and Shout, which is in the shape of like a lunchbox. Very interesting.
Well, it's actually like the old 45 record holders.
Yeah, that exactly, like a 45 record holder. In fact, the CDs are designed to look like 45s. And it was really a really cool idea. And I've talked to some of the folks from Rhino from the packaging department, and they got some geniuses working over there.
Well, thank you. On Beg, Scream, and Shout, which is like the ultimate soul compilation, the other interesting things about that is that there's not an artist who's duplicated. So, for instance, if the Supremes are on there, there's only one Supremes. And the reason why is it gives opportunity for us to have a lot of relatively obscure songs that people might not have heard that are really great. And then the other thing on that is rather than have a liner note or a booklet, we put the information on trading cards, so each artist is on his own card, his or her own card.
Pretty cool stuff. I like it. It's Rhino Records, and again, they're at Rhino, R-H-I-N-O.com on the internet. And Harold Bronson, thanks so much for coming on, and hope we'll talk to you again, and say hi to Richard for us.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.